Assalamualaikum, 大家好 ，Wanakum. Welcome to the Malaysian Students Podcast, and I'm your host today, Felicia. So let's welcome another podcaster here, Yudong.
Hello everyone, my name is Yudong.
Yeah, so here's a special episode in March, which we are having a very, very unique guest, who is Amira Aisha beside me. So she, one of the origin that we decided to make this episode is actually, I'm currently volunteering in MUDA, and during the process, I've mingled with one of a very aspiring women who currently serve in the politics. So Amira Aisha, would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
Hello, thank you so much to Felicia and Yudong for having me here. My name is Amira Aisha binti Abdul Aziz. You guys can call me Amira. I'm currently 27 years old. I am the co-founder and also the Secretary General of MUDA.
Wow, cool. So, believing coming from a family like who? Wait, what am I talking about?
You mean my family background?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So I don't come from a political family background. So nobody in my family is a politician. Mm. My mother is a teacher. She's a single mother. My father passed away when I was 12 years old.
Mm.
And I think when I was growing up, I've never really imagined ever being in politics. I always knew that I wanted to do something for education though. But I always thought that I wanted to do stuff in public policy. And that's why I joined the Ministry of Education. But then one thing led to another. Because of Langkah Sheraton, I felt like there was a really urgent need for the young people to be very much involved in politics, and so I jumped into political landscape.
Yeah, true. Thank you so much for telling us about like your aspiring stories behind your political journey lah. So I believe that you definitely received like lots of praise from the media being such a successful woman in politics. So I don't think I will need to praise you too much here and here. Like, let's just be a like normal conversation, and without further ado, let's dive deeply into our topic today. So the topic that we're gonna explore today is actually about racial equity in our nation, Malaysia. So actually during the last night Cerama, which is the Cerama in conjunction with the International Women Day, like I found you really uplifting when giving the Cerama, which is like quite amazing for me. So since you mentioned that you want pendidikan berkualiti, I'm wondering, like, with the existence of quota system and the serious brain issue in Malaysia, like, how can this issue be addressed and also be resolved from your point of view?
Yeah. I think let's go one by one. In terms of the brain drain issue, when I was serving in the Ministry of Education, what we have found out is that not exactly that we have brain drain. Actually, we have a lot of really intelligent and capable people within our system. There are a lot of people who are able to, you know, push our system and our education system further. But the problem that we have right now is that we have a huge mismatch between what's provided in the education sector and what is out there in terms of job industries. We have things like, for example, more than 100,000 STEM graduates per year, but not all of them will have jobs when they go out of the system. And so that means that our education is not really preparing our students for the real world out there.
True.
And that's the biggest problem that we have. When we were in the Ministry of Education, what we wanted to do is to ensure that the Ministry of Education is working closely with the Ministry of Human Resource so that we can study what kind of job opportunities that we have out there, what kind of the forecast of jobs, because we have to look not just within this year or the next 2-3 years, we have to look within 5 to 10 years in order for us to figure out what kind of education that we need to provide for our students. And so if we can manage to do that, if we can have our experts looking into the forecast of the job industries, which is not exactly something that is really, really impossible if you have the access to big data, which supposedly our Ministry of Education and Ministry of Human Resource should have access to those data. And when you have that, only then you will get to decide what kind of education should we then provide our students, so that we don't have, for example, excess of students studying in medicine but not enough doctors in Malaysia. So you don't really understand how is it that we don't have enough doctors, but we have a lot of medical students who are underemployed or unemployed. And so you can see that there's a huge mismatch there. In terms of the quota system, what I believe that we should have done is that it's okay to have a quota system, but not between races.
Yeah.
What we should have in terms of quota system is quota system of classes. Because when we look at the classes in Malaysia, the B40, M40 and T20, it is not exclusive to a certain race. There are Malay B40, of course, but there are also Chinese and Indian B40. there are Chinese and Indian T20, but there are also Malay T20s, right?
Mm.
So when you are talking about quota system in terms of education, what you should provide is the quota for the classes. In order for us to empower the B40 community to push outside of their cycle of poverty, you need to empower them a little bit more with scholarships and all those kind of things. And not necessarily within, when you're talking about education, we need to also look outside of the usual academic qualifications, outside of the usual everyone has to study science, everyone has to study art stream. There are students who do not like, or maybe they are not exactly academically inclined, but they are very good at skills. They are very good at technique and vocational skills. And these are the things that we need to look into.
Yep, true.
So the quota system must based on the needs, not based on the races.
Yes,
true.
Exactly.
As well as it's very important to spark talent among students instead of just take importance on the academic merely. Yeah, it's actually very good insight about like the job opportunities in terms of like the education system from Amira. Yeah, that's actually a very good sharing because from my own experience, like frankly speaking, my dream university is University Malaya, and I decided like to study medical there. But then one of my point of worry is also about the quota system because there are like almost 90% of the chance for the Bumiputra and only 10% for non-Bumiputra. Like,
And I remembered this one time where one friend of mine, she managed to get straight A's for her SPM, my Indian friend. But then one day when we were applying for the IPTA, she called me up crying because that was when she realized that actually the non-Bumis can't apply for foundation studies. And so she has no other avenue to go other than matriculation or other than STPM, which might take a longer route than foundation, which is only 1 year's study. And I remember at that point of time when I was 17 years old, I remember thinking how that was so unfair because, for example, myself, I didn't get straight A. I have two B's. But the lane for me to enter into IPTA is much more easier than my friend. Meanwhile, we are not, she's not any richer than me. We are of the same class background, and I remember feeling that was very unfair.
Oh yeah, that was actually painful for
me.
Yeah, it's really good like for the honest and transparent point of view from you, because as a person who got privileged in this system, it's really good for you to have that kind of feeling towards your friend. Yeah, good sharing. So I'm wondering as well, because just now yesterday I came across of your video when you was announcing during the announcement of you as the candidate of Dun Putri Wangsa, right? Then you mentioned that some of the current policies are really unequal for a majority community in Malaysia. Then what do you think about like the race-based policy?
In the same way that I mentioned just now, now when we look at the origin of the race-based policy, it started back then late 70s, early 80s with the new economic policy, and you can understand where it's coming from. Because at that point of time, the effect of the divide and conquer system that was created by the British was still very much obvious in Malaysia. You can see how, because of the divide and conquer system by the British, you can see how the Malays were pushed to the kampung side. Meanwhile, the Indians are managing estates and the Chinese are managing businesses. So you can understand why the government at that point of time wanting to give more opportunities for the Malays to break out of that system so that they can start on an equal level playing field with the Chinese and Indians of their counterparts. But policies have to be relooked every now and then.
Yep.
If you remained with the same policy, whereas the current system has changed or the current landscape of Malaysia has changed, then you will not progress well. So new economic policy or the Dasar Ekonomi Baru that was introduced by Tun Razak at that point of time might be very suitable at that point of time. But as time progresses, you can see that there's a need for you to continuously introduce new policies. And for now, like I mentioned, I don't think that we should still stick with race-based policies. What we should do is looking at the class-based policies. Because at the end of the day, the gaps that we see in terms of, for example, when it comes to education, for example, we're talking about very apparently is like the digital access gap. And digital access gap is not a gap about races. It's not that the Malays don't have enough digital
mm-hmm.
access, meanwhile the Chinese and Indians do, right? It's again the gap of classes.
Yeah.
You can see in terms of broadband subscription, the B40 communities only have 49% broadband subscription.
Mm-hmm.
The M40 communities have 90.7% broadband subscription. And the T20 have almost 100% broadband subscription. So you see that the huge gap is between the classes. Now, obviously, if we are to look into it, maybe more Chinese are in the M40 in comparison to Malays who are in the B40.
Mm.
But you can't deny the fact that there are still Chinese in the B40 community.
True.
There are still Indians. I mean, there are a lot of Indians in the B40 community.
Yes.
So it doesn't make sense for you to continuously go towards race-based policies when what you have to look into is actually more into class-based policies.
Mm.
Yeah.
As well as need-based policy, and we'll definitely always need to like improve and update
yeah.
our policy, move with the time, like cannot still stick with the traditional one, even
yeah.
though it was effective last time. It's really
mm.
a good saying from Amira. Do you have any?
You must do the changes.
Yeah.
The policy for the last time is not used.
Yeah.
It's not suitable for current situation. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Changes is needed. Yeah.
Mm.
So it comes to like one of the main spice of like the whole podcast. Like as a person who got privilege from the Kedudukan Istimewa Orang Melayu, like what do you think about the impact of the this Kedudukan Istimewa on the non-Malay community?
Mm.
Mm.
If I may just touch a little bit, because obviously when it comes to the Kedudukan Istimewa Orang Melayu, the impact of the non-Malay community is quite apparent, right?
Mm.
In sense that the B40 community of non-Malays might not enjoy the Kedudukan Istimewa that the Orang Melayu has. But more something that is not as obvious as the impact on the non-Malay community is also the impact on the Malay communities that is within the B40 community. Now, why do I say this? I used to grow up in a squatter area. So I did not come from a well-off family.
Mm.
I used to grow up in a squatter area where in that area, you can see that although this area is made up of largely Malays and they are supposed to be able to enjoy the privileges because they have the Kedudukan Istimewa Orang Melayu, but you don't see them progressing
mm.
as much. You don't see these promises that were supposed to champion the Malays affecting them as much. There are still a lot of the Malays in that squatter area that still suffer from drugs issues, that still suffer from dropouts from school. And so when we're looking at Kedudukan Istimewa Orang Melayu, who does it really benefit? Does it really benefit Malays as a whole? Or does it just benefit the elites of the Malays?
Mm, true.
And when you're talking about, for example, the opportunity to buy lands, the opportunity to buy houses, and bumi lot. Obviously, that opportunity, bumi lot, belongs to the bumis, right? But even when you're looking at that, which of the Bumi people who can buy those lots? Which of the Bumi people can buy those lands, those houses? Because at the end of the day, those lots will not go to the poor of the poor, right?
Mm.
It will still go to the elites.
Yes.
It will still go to the people serving the government. And at the end of the day, it does not benefit the B40 Malays,
mm.
nor does it benefit the Chinese and Indians who are the B40. Similarly, even with the Bumi lots in place, the Chinese and Indians who are elites will still be able to get benefit out of it.
Mm.
But the Chinese and Indians who are not elites will not be able to get benefits
yeah.
of it. So if you ask me about Kedudukan Istimewa Orang Melayu, I think at the end of the day, this position doesn't really benefit anyone. Not the Malay, not the Chinese, not the Indian,
mm.
other than the elites.
Mm.
Yeah.
True, like the rich one is getting richer than the poor one remain
yeah.
the same while they are being neglected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And after pandemic COVID-19,
mm.
it's even worse. You see that, for example, in Johor.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Johor, a huge amount of the M40 community was spiraling down to the B40 community.
Yes.
So it's people are saying that it's no longer B40 now, it's B60.
Mm.
Because the majority of our people are in a lower income group.
Mm, yeah, understandable. Yeah. Yeah, so talking about like the impact on non-Malay community as well, like in your opinion, how do you think like we can resolve the lack of sense of belonging of non-Malay community because of the unfair treatment that Bumi Law just now?
Another thing that, because when you asked me this question, I remembered another thing. I remember there's this one friend of mine, you guys have volunteered here, so you might know, you've met Yogesh, I suppose.
Yogesh. Yes.
So Yogesh's brother is a very good friend of mine. And I remembered when his brother was in school, and he told me that when he was younger at school, and the teacher was asking each and every one of them, what do you want to be when you grow up? And his brother answered that he wants to be a prime minister of Malaysia. And the teacher, you know, a teacher is supposed to be someone who encourages
and
the
support.
Student's dreams, right?
Yes.
But the teacher laughed at him, along with his classmates. Because the teacher said that you're not a Malay, and only Malays can be prime minister in this country. And when I listened to that story, I felt this huge sense of unfairness, you know?
Yes, true.
I mean, Harvin is a Malaysian first, right? I'm a Malaysian first before I'm a Malay. Harvin's a Malaysian first before he's Indian. And I think that it's very important for us to understand, especially for the young people. We can't just tell them that your dreams don't matter because you are Chinese or because you are Indian. Because at the end of the day, we all want to live the Malaysian dream. Now it sounds like an American dream, right? But no, I mean, we all want to feel belong to this nation, right? Because as much as I don't know any other country, you guys as well, I suppose, do have never, you know, you also, Malaysia is your homeland.
Yes.
And I think it's very, very important for us to start educating from very young that everyone deserves equal chance in this land of ours. As long as you're a Malaysian, as long as you're a hardworking, good Malaysian, you should not be deprived from any chances in Malaysia. And that's what MUDA is all about.
Mm.
When we established MUDA, we have never thought about, oh, what if one day Chinese and Indian will become the president of MUDA?
Mm.
If they are capable to become the president of MUDA, let them be.
Mm.
If they are capable to become prime minister, let them be. And that has always been our stance. And obviously, this has to be ingrained in policy in terms for it to become a system that you cannot break. But at the end of the day, what's most important is, other than the policy itself, is the culture of the people. You need to start educating people to understand this culture. And for me, when you are talking about how do we instill this sense of belonging to the people, first of all, it's very important for us to fight against racial discrimination. If we see any racial discrimination happening, we have to fight against it without any, you know, without any hesitation, without any reservation. You fight against it and you make people aware why is it important for us to be accepting about our diversity and celebrate as our strength rather than our weakness.
I mean, like, talking about racial discrimination, right? Most of the people will visualize out the racial discrimination as something big, but then for me, right, even the small thing like stereotype about certain community is considered as the racial discrimination, like, as well, because like the common stereotype about Malay community is saying that like Malay got kedudukan istimewa, so they are lazy. But is that a fact? Like, we can see Amira being so hardworking and responsible here, and someone say like Chinese community are like tipu in business, and Indian community like gangsterism,
skin discrimination.
Yeah, as well as like lots of the nonsense. I think that one is what we should eradicate in the daily routine. Like, stop saying that and stop assuming that the certain community, something like that.
Spot on. You concluded it very correctly.
Thank you so much. Do you have any extra question?
I spoke a lot again.
it's actually very good sharing from a person like from a Malay who got privileged from all this. Then you being like brave and say out like all the truth. Yeah, true. Yeah. By the way, since you are like such a successful woman in politics, right?
Not yet.
But you have like done a great job so far. So, do you have any words for women or female that are interested in politics?
Well, politics have always been seen as a gentleman's club. People always look at politics and think, oh, this is the world for men and not for women. And when women enter into politics, I'll be very frank and I'll be very honest, it's not an easy journey. you will be criticized for things that your male counterparts won't be criticized for.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when you're fighting against something, and when males are fighting about something, it's fighting about policy, they'll be criticized for their ideas. But when you're a female, you'll suddenly be criticized about your looks, you'll be criticized
mm-hmm.
about how you dress. And when you spoke out against something, instead of people saying that you're outspoken, people will just say, oh, you're being emotional. The stereotype against women exists, but that doesn't mean that we have to submit to that stereotype. That doesn't mean that we have to stay away because we are afraid of that stereotype. Women have to enter into politics to prove that we are not subpar to men. Women have to enter into politics to fight for policies, to fight for women's rights, to fight for the things that otherwise men wouldn't have fought for. And at the end of the day, if there are more young women who wanted to join politics, I implore you to do so. I welcome you with open arms. It's not an easy journey, but I can assure you that there are a lot of senior women politicians who will be here to support you, to give you guidance,
mm-hmm.
and to celebrate you as well in this landscape of politics. For me, myself, I'm very lucky to have the likes of, for example, Wabi Hannah Yu,
mm-hmm.
Wabi Teo Ni Ching, who have been very supportive and have guided me. And I remember this one time I was bashed really horribly on Twitter. And when they were bashing you, they just have no reservation, you know, like they forgot that there is a person behind an account. And I remember at that point of time, I felt really down and I wanted to just delete my Twitter. And Hannah Yu said to me, like, Amira, you are not on Twitter to please those who will never be pleased with you. You are on Twitter to speak for those who want to hear your voice. So you stay on Twitter. And I think that's very meaningful. And you will have a lot of those advices from senior women politicians. And I want to welcome you into politics with open arms as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually very inspiring. Like,
yeah.
Some of the irrational mythism will just like mocking you like for nothing. Yeah. Mm, yeah. It's actually a very great growth. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it comes to the end of our podcast, and actually Amira concluded it very well with the last word to the female who are interested to participate in politics. Sincere thank you for Amira for attending our podcast, even though like our podcast channel is honestly during the development and not really popular.
It's okay. It's my honor to do so.
We are really thankful
for your
transparent opinion and responses. So let's end this podcast with a quote from Udong. Yeah, come on.
Yes, and this is the quote from Shafi Abda, the president of Pakri Raisan. In God we trust, unite we must. And we are here to build a nation, not a particular race or religion.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.